News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in once more for Brett Winterbull, taking you up till 6 o'clock tonight. Telephone number 704-570-1110. And joining me, we haven't done radio together in a while, but he is here and he's back. And it's been a pretty long hiatus, and that's Coach Matt Doherty joining us in studio. So, first of all, you've been like all over the place, right?
I mean, Yeah. It's good to be back with you, Brett. I was in New York last week. I was honored at a dinner, which is really cool, CYO dinner, Catholic Youth Organization, and got to see some buddies from grammar school and high school, had a golf outing, and my family was there. My wife and daughter were there. My daughter's living in New York, so. And then had a book signing event at Mulcahy's Pub in Wantagh, a big establishment. And Brian Kilmeade attended. It was really cool to have him there. And I asked him to say a few words, and he did. Saw some great, you know, high school teammates and classmates from, from back in the day. And then Saturday had a book signing at my grammar school, so St. Raphael's in East Meadow. So we had a great week. My wife and I, and really neat to see my daughter getting settled on Long Island. She's working for Ralph Lauren in New York City.
Oh, wow.
So, it's really, we just had a wonderful, fulfilling week.
So I know the commute from Long Island to the city of, or the borough of Manhattan, which everyone up there calls the city. In terms of that, is that a long commute? Is she actually living in Long Island?
She is. She's living in Long Beach with my sister. She's taken over that lease. My sister's moving out. And the cool thing is Long Beach is the first stop or the last stop, obviously, depending on when you're coming. So she walks into a warm train at like 7:20. And you know, if you're falling asleep, it's the last train, so you don't sleep through your stop. And it's direct to Penn Station, and then she walks from Penn Station to her office.
Okay.
So it's as good a commute as you can ask for.
That's awesome, man. Ralph Lauren, and anyone who knows anything about me knows that I am a Ralph Lauren disciple. Probably, yep. And I'm not even joking, probably 95% of my clothes are Ralph Lauren.
Yeah. You know, it's really, I've always worn, you know, his stuff too, and you know, just to now get to understand the culture, you know, he's still involved. He's I think in his early 80s, and you know, when you talk to business owners and leaders, like, why is Ralph Lauren still successful, why is Chick-fil-A still successful, and I've asked successful business owners this, and they say because the founders are still involved, as opposed to selling off the name and letting a private equity firm take over, and they're just, you know, trying to increase the revenue, the profit margin, and they don't really care as much about the legacy and the brand as the founder would. So it's amazing what Ralph Lauren has done over many, many years.
Well, it's funny. So you you said Lauren, which,
right.
Funny thing is, I used to say that all the time.
That's how
I used to pronounce it, Ralph Lauren.
Right.
And they're like, dude, what are you doing? I was like, I thought that's the way it's pronounced. Yeah. But you also taught me something else, just from an old sports thing, to get in the weeds for a second. When you said CYO, so I've known about CYO my entire sports career, even before that, when you would watch documentaries on ESPN, whatever, and, you know, CYO. And I always thought it meant city youth organization,
right.
Not Catholic youth. I thought it was city youth.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It's a Catholic youth organization. And, you know, the Mr. Perkle, who passed away, I recognized that night. He was the gentleman who for 40 years ran the league. And you think of, like, not many people really knew who he was. You know, he wasn't a coach, he wasn't a player. But behind the scenes, he was the one that made sure the gym was open, the coaches were hired, the referees showed up, you know. And without Mr. Perkle and my coach, Mr. Coleman, who I ended up seeing at the book signing, I'd seen since I was in eighth grade. You know, it's really cool, the impact that men and women can have on young people by providing them a platform to fall in love with a sport, a musical instrument, technology, whatever it might be, painting, without those men, maybe I don't play basketball and fall in love with the sport like I did. And so it's just so thankful to grow up in East Meadow in the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah, the in terms of my love for sports, it was sort of ingrained in me because my grandmother's in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in Knoxville, Tennessee. Basically, being a part of that, the basketball version of a league of your own, play professional basketball for New York in the 30s, and but with me, it was the boys' club, the Boys and Girls Club, and that was basically my, for lack of a better term, my babysitter after school all during the summer. I mean, that's where I was always at. And, I mean, there were times Mom would drop me off at 9 in the morning where I'd be at my grandparents who lived real close to it, and I would walk there, and I would be there from 9 a.m. to maybe 4 p.m.
Yeah, how about that?
You know?
Yeah, it shapes you.
It does.
The people that influence you at that age, and they're going to either influence you for good or for bad, and it's usually a coach or an older person that you're impressed with, and maybe that's an athlete, maybe it's a musician, maybe it's somebody who's got a nice car or money, and you fall into either a good trap or a bad trap.
Well, it's impressive, though, that you still, remember names, because I have a hard time remembering my teachers' names, except for the ones that I absolutely wanted to just, get rid of.
Yeah.
To put it politely, but it was, but there are only a couple of people from my youth in the world of sports that I remember their actual names.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And that's pretty impressive that you were just started rattling people off.
Yeah, well, they made a big impact, and my brother then came up through the ranks behind me, and so he had some of the same coaches. And then funny story, my nephew married into the Egan family, and his father-in-law, Tom Egan, taught me in sixth grade social studies. He was at the dinner. And I'm like, how old were you when you were teaching me? He said, 21. I'm like, 21 years old? You're teaching? That should be against the law.
Right, right.
You're teaching me social studies at 21. And I'm like, I was 12.
I can't imagine me doing that at 21.
Right?
Like, at 21, I was a disaster.
Right.
How much has changed since, but even more of a disaster.
He was a disaster with a mustache and a tie. He looked like Tom Selleck. And it's like, at that time, you hung on every word.
Yeah.
Because he was older and he was, but we were blessed to have people that cared to teach.
Well, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but it's to your point. Being the sports freak show that I was from about 8 years old throughout my entire career, and knowing every stat and where everyone was from, and when you guys went to the national championship in 81 and then again in 82, and I would have been 12 and 13 years old, I thought you guys were basically old men. And you're only 8 years old. It's like, oh my gosh, he's on TV.
Right.
And James Worthy had a beard.
That's right.
And I thought you guys were basically old guys.
That's right. No, I get it. It's all about perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, same deal. I mean, I'm 12 years old in this class, and I have a 21-year-old man teaching us, and the perspective is so warped. You think he's fully matured. I look at, me at 21, as you said, you at 21, I don't know if I'd want myself at 21 teaching my son at 12.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winterbull. He will be back tomorrow. Joining me after a little bit of a hiatus, after he had things going on and Winterbull had things going on, is Coach Matt Doherty back in studio with us, and we're taking you up until 6 o'clock tonight. Telephone number 704-570-1110. And so some news coming out of Myers Park High School. You guys know that, we've talked about it a lot here at WBT about, the alleged sexual assaults that took place, and then CMS, settling out of court with one of the victims. I believe there's a total of 6 girls that have come forward to talk about this, and how Myers Park, the principal at the time, allegedly Mark Bosco, allegedly downplayed it and reportedly, told the girls, well, if you go forward with this and you're found not guilty, or they're found not guilty, then that's going to be a stain on your mark and everything else going forward for the rest of your life, as opposed to basically going out there and trying to help these girls. Well, When the school year started, Principal Mark Bosco was put basically on administrative leave. Like they said, okay, we're going to put you somewhere and we're just going to put you on leave for a while. Well, it was announced today, and if everyone could see me, they would see me doing the air quotes around this word, that he, quote unquote, resigned or stepped down today as Myers Park principal. But he will remain within the CMS system, and he's being moved to central office. And so the quote or the statement from CMS said, both Mark Bosco and CMS believes that after 8 years plus as principal of Myers Park, change in leadership is needed at the school. And this was an email sent out to parents and as a voicemail sent to parents as well. And so this is it's not surprising. The only thing surprising is that it took so long. And I will also say this in terms of that this still does not, obviously, by any stretch of the imagination, stop or quell all the issues that were going on there previously. And so CMS says they have begun the process of identifying who the next principal at Myers Park will be. And they're going to hope to try and move quickly throughout this process. And in the meantime, Dr. Maureen Furr will remain as the interim principal at Myers Park High School. And so for those of you wondering, Mark Bosco will retain his $149,400 a year salary, even though he's in central office now. Not sure what his job will be. No idea. But even if they were to make him head of custodian or lunchroom lady or whatever, or lunchroom man for that matter, he would still retain his salary because CMS does not take away salaries. Once you are at a certain salary, it never goes down. It can only go up. Just like when they took the former principal at Audrey Kell High School from there and they put him in the PPE warehouse, he retained his $150,000 a year, give or take, salary to basically distribute masks. So big things going on there at Myers Park High School. So when we come back, we're going to get Coach Doherty's thoughts on this about just – A, keeping the same salary no matter what your job is once you've got a salary, and B, just, you know, them doing this now as opposed to maybe at the beginning of the school year, because, you know, if you remember, Elise Dashew famously said on a Facebook post, and she's the school board chairwoman, that those girls weren't raped, and then an hour later took down the Facebook post. And so we're going to get into that and the media. We're going to do a deep dive into media, the good and the bad of media, how it relates. I can give you all the inside information, but also Coach Doherty has firsthand experience of literally having to deal with them every single day at some of the biggest cities in America, Dallas, Miami, Chicago, and here in North Carolina. So he's Coach Matt Doherty. I'm Brett Jensen. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen here, sitting in for Brett Winterville. He will be returning tomorrow for Thursday and Friday to take you home for the rest of the week. Coming up at 6 o'clock, don't forget Mark Garrison for Charlotte at 6, and he'll be joining us at around 5:45 to preview what's coming on tonight with Charlotte at 6. Okay, so last segment, we spoke. I gave you the rundown of what's going on at Myers Park High School with the principal, Mark Bosco, there, resigning, if you want to use that term. But he's no longer going to be there. He's the principal, after a lot of controversies and everything, he's now being moved to the central office, the main office of CMS, where he will retain his salary of $150,000 a year, regardless of whatever it is that they have him doing. So, Coach, when you hear me talking about that and just laying everything down, does anything immediately jump out at you? Does anything stick out, be it the salary, being it odd timing that, you know, school started back in August and here we are, they're finally doing this move? Is there anything that sticks out to you?
Yes, things that stick out is if he was guilty, he should be fired, right? So maybe they felt that, all right, we don't feel he's guilty of anything, but due to public relations, we need to move him out of that role and try to put him off to the side and hide him a little bit, and we feel he deserves to keep his salary. Now, to me, I question that leadership, because if you feel he didn't do anything, then you should stand up for him and keep him in that position. And if you feel he did something wrong, then you should fire him and not continue to pay somebody as an overpriced administrator.
From a PR standpoint, they say, okay, we don't think he did anything wrong, but from a PR standpoint, it's better to move him out of the school, but we don't think he did anything wrong because so that way we're not going to fire him. Do you think that's – I generally think that's probably what happened. Right. I think they only did this for PR purposes.
Right, yeah. And listen, I'm never one – like I'm kind of a right and wrong, black and white person, and I don't like politics of jobs, but that's the reality. And I dealt with a lot of politics at the University of North Carolina. And I just felt like if you do the right thing and stand for the right thing, that should be good enough. But the court of public opinion is so powerful now more than ever because of social media and the millennials and, you know, that it could drive decisions. So maybe this is a way to protect the man, keep his integrity, keep his salary. I just, you know, do I like it? No, because it's inefficient. You know, you're talking about government, education, jobs that become inefficient, you know, and there's budgets to be met. And does that make sense? But when you're talking about the individual, does he deserve it? You know, people close to him would say, yes, he deserves to keep a job like this and keep his salary. You know, so it's really a tricky deal when you get down to it. And that's why... You know, leadership and jobs that are very public, there's an art form to it.
There are times when I have reported on this, gosh, I countless times, you know, well, you know, many, 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 many times, be it in high school, pro, but especially college. College and high school where it's very prevalent. And if I'm the athletic director or I'm the principal of the school and I go, all right, coach, here's the deal. Resign, that way it won't say fired on your resume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, we just want you to resign.
Right.
And so now you see this, it says CMS and Mark Bosco both agree, and it was a resignation.
Right.
And that screams forced resignation.
That's
all over.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I resigned at the University of North Carolina. I didn't have a choice.
Really?
You resigned.
I didn't know that. Seriously, I did not know that.
Yeah.
You actually resigned.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my choices were resign and get... paid over a two-year period or fired and get a lump sum check. And I think there were other terms, but it was more beneficial for me to resign on different fronts. So, yeah, I resigned. Come on now, I wasn't fired. I chose to leave the best coaching job in all of America on my own free will.
Of your alma mater.
My alma mater. My wife's from North Carolina. I chose to leave. Sure, I resigned. I was a nice guy. Like, let somebody else have a chance.
I literally did not know that.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Well, that feeds exactly into what we were just talking about. That's the perfect example. Okay, so when we come back, I told Coach that I wanted to get into some a lot of media stuff because he has a bevy of experience dealing with the media at some of the biggest cities in America on literally a, you know, pretty much a daily basis, and definitely a daily basis during basketball seasons. And so we're going to talk to him about that. And if you guys have any questions about media, because I can tell you all sides of it, from the sports side, the news side, I can take you into, as they say, behind the curtain, as it were, and so can Coach Doherty on that matter. So we're going to get into a lot of different aspects with media because media has actually been in the news the last couple of days, and so we're going to talk about that as well. He's Coach Matt Doherty. I'm Brett Jensen, sitting in for Brett Winterble. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winterble. He will be returning tomorrow in studio nonetheless. Doesn't matter which Brett is in studio. But Coach Matt Doherty's here regardless. He can take on all Bretts, and so here he is. Okay, so let's get into some of the media there, Coach. There's a lot of different things going on, and the first thing I want to talk about is what happened with Nancy Pelosi yesterday, where she was having a press conference, and they were talking about, you know, the $3.5 trillion budget that they can't get passed, And here's one of the questions that that I want you to hear the question from the CBS reporter, and then I want you to hear Nancy Pelosi's answer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Our latest CBS News poll shows that only about 10% of Americans describe themselves as knowing a lot of specific things that are in the reconciliation package, and that the majority don't know anything at all. So do you think you need to do a better job at messaging, and going forward, how do you sell this if ultimately you have to...
Well, I think you all could do a better job of selling it, to be very frank with you, because every time I come here, I go through the list. Family medical leave, climate, the issues that are in there. And but it is true, it is hard to break through when you have such a comprehensive package. But as we narrow it down and put it out there, I think that it will. For example, one of the things in the bill is the continuation of the Biden tax credit, that is child tax credit, that is in the was in the rescue package. That has great appeal. Do people know where it springs from? No. But it is a vast bill. It has a lot in it, and we'll have to continue to make sure the public does. But whether they know it or not, they overwhelmingly support it. And by the way, women much more than men. Men like...
Okay, so there are a couple of things there.
There's a lot to unpack with that. They know it or not, they like it.
Whether they know it or not, they overwhelmingly support it.
That sounds like the makings of a T-shirt. Whether you... Oh, gosh, that's so...
It almost sounds like, thank you, sir, may I have another?
Sounds like communism, socialism, a couple of isms.
There's a lot of truth.
You don't know what's good for you. We know what's good for you. You will like this.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and then the thing was, do you need to do a better job of selling this to the public? Because only 10% of the public actually knows what's in this bill. And then she said, well, I think you all, the media, could do a better job of selling it, to be perfectly frank with you.
Yeah. How about this? What immediately comes to mind when I wrote down, does the media work for her? Well, maybe they have in the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're tired of it. Okay. Because they've worked for the left. But even if they did work for her, okay, it's like me after a game, a team loses, and if I stand up and say to the media, my players should have done a better job, what kind of leadership is that?
Mm.
So how about this? Maybe I'm not doing a good job of teaching. Maybe I'm not doing a good job of breaking it down. So how about she says, you know what? It is a comprehensive bill. There's a lot to it. I need to do a better job of communicating it to you all. Maybe I need to present it in a different manner.
Because what we see is the $3.5 trillion price tag, which a couple of senators are like, that's not going to happen. And some of the media have turned. Much of the media has turned on the two senators, the Democrat from Arizona and then obviously Manchin from West Virginia. And, you know, was a matter of fact, one of the, it was 538, the big political website, statistical sports website, 538 by Nate Silver, who used to be at the New York Times. They had an article early this week that said that the Arizona senator has taken a hard turn right, which is funny because she literally has a 100% voting record of voting with Pelosi and Biden. During her tenure, she's voted 100% of the time with the Democrats, except for this multi-trillion dollar bill that she thinks is just too big.
Yeah, well, it is.
It is. But again, that's where the media comes. And so she's almost attacking the media. When you had to deal with the media, did you ever, this is maybe the wrong term, not chastise, but did you ever go after the media saying, you know, either with an individual reporter or as a whole, you guys aren't doing this, or this is wrong, or you got that wrong? Did you ever talk to a media member?
No, I didn't have that leverage. I wasn't at North Carolina long enough, didn't have enough success. However, I would call out a member of the media one-to-one. It's just like coaching, right? If you have a player that's doing something well, praise them in front of the team. If you have a player that's not doing something well, pull them to the side and talk to them, you know, quietly. That was always not my style either in coaching. But if you're kind of reprimanding somebody, you're not going to win that. What do they say? Media buys ink by the barrel.
Yeah.
And so, but I remember the journalists were the ones I have the biggest issue with, because the journalists didn't need the columnists.
Yep.
They didn't need to interview you. They could wake up and write an article.
That's right.
About you.
Let me tell you, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but let me tell you a quick secret about sports columnists. Many, 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 a very high percentage, don't even go to the games. They watch the games on TV and then write their column.
So this guy in Raleigh, the Raleigh News and Observer, writes an article in February of my first year at North Carolina as to why I hadn't signed my contract yet. And he's saying one of the options, he's going to go back to Notre Dame. And I'm like, I called him up. It's Carl Tudor, I think.
Carlton Tudor.
And I said, Carlton. I said, Carlton, really? Like, I'm going to go back to Notre Dame? Like we're number one in the country. Mike Bray just took the job. It's not realistic that even if I wanted to, could I go back to Notre Dame? I haven't signed the contract because I've just been putting it off. I've just been putting it off. It's not the matter of anything but just the fact that, it's a legal document that I've been putting off. And I said, by the way, you never interviewed me for this article. Like, how could you write this article and not talk to me about it? And he kept defending himself. Finally said, you're right, I'm sorry. I'm like, but you know what? They don't write the my mistake, I'm sorry, in the same section with the same font in the paper. It's like, my bad, I'm sorry. And so, and then I remember having another guy who I liked. Listen, they have the job. They got to sell papers. And they don't control the headlines. That's the thing that screws you.
That's true.
Is bad.
We don't. See, people don't. They think we write the headlines, reporters. So, we don't do that.
So you're doing this interview, and you think you have a good relationship, and all of a sudden a headline comes out like, Daugherty's a jerk. And it's like you're interviewing, you talk about, and like, what? Like, why'd you put that headline? And I didn't put that headline. And so, we could talk a lot more about the media.
Oh, we are. So when we come back, we're going to get into a lot of different things, because there's now media talking about, so apparently they're no longer favoring Biden as much as they were early on. We've got a lot to get into.
What took them so long?
Yeah, right. And so if you guys got any questions about the media for Coach or me, 704-570-1110. You're listening to News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winterbull today. He will be back tomorrow as normal, sitting in with me.
I don't know if he's going to be normal.
Normal. Yeah, that's.
I think he's a new, improved Brett Winterbull.
It might be.
I mean, just from word on the street.
I mean, bar's not set very high, but yeah.
Well, I didn't say that. I didn't say that, Winterbull.
I kid because I care. But he'll be back tomorrow and Friday as usual. Sitting in, that voice you just heard, by the way, sitting in with us is Coach Matt Daugherty. Like, he's here every Wednesday except for the last two Wednesdays where he had a thing.
Thursdays, actually.
Thursdays. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
but I was
Thursdays.
Like, wait,
coming Thursdays, but I'm going to be out of town tomorrow.
Okay.
I was scheduled to come in today, and Brett Brett Winterbull's on IR. You stepped in for Brett, and you and I get reconnected again.
That's exactly
right. Sounds like the makings of a song.
That's right. Okay, so telephone number is 704-570-1110. And there are a lot of things to go on with the media. So we talked about what Pelosi said yesterday, saying to the media, well, you guys haven't done a good enough job promoting this, talking about the budget, like it's the media's thing. But I will say this. So, and it's not just a national media, Coach. It's local media, and especially here in Charlotte. And the Charlotte Observer is the guiltiest of all in terms of trying to spread or produce a particular agenda here or there. And all you need to know, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, I never read a single Charlotte Observer op-ed page, ever. Until I started doing news with WBT 3 years ago, September. And I remember, I want to say it was 2019. Yeah, it was 2019. The Charlotte Observer where they always do their endorsements for political candidates. Well, there's 9 county commissioners. They endorsed 8 Democrats.
8.
Okay? And that's, and so the election comes, and 9 Democrats win. So it's only Democrats on the Mecklenburg County commissioners. It's 9-0. 9 Democrats, 0 Republicans. And then, even though they endorsed 8 of the 9 Democrats, the Observer comes out with an opinion piece going, yeah, 9 Democrats, that's just too many. I'm like, what? What?
Why?
What?
Why? I ask you this as a journalist. Why should, how can newspapers endorse political candidates? Like, what? Aren't they supposed to report the news? Like, and not be by, why would they endorse candidates as a paper?
And I can tell you, it goes back to what we were just talking about in the previous segment with columnists. So columnists' jobs is to give opinions. Reporters like me, like Brent Winterbull's job is to give opinions. My job is to give you the information.
That's right.
So there's two different aspects there for a columnist and a reporter.
That's right.
And when you have the op-ed, they think they're doing, their job is to give an opinion what they think is best for the community. And so they think by endorsing a candidate, they're doing the community a service going, hey, we really like candidate X as opposed to candidate Y. That's what they do. But so they endorsed 8 of the 9 Democrats. And then when Democrats swept, they went, oh, no, that's one too many. That's one Democrat too many. There needs to be a token Republican on the board.
So basically, I mean, if we go deep, you know, obviously there's someone who's the head of the pyramid, the org chart, the owner of the paper, whomever it is, the influence that that person has, because obviously they're not going to endorse candidates that the owner of that paper would not support, right?
For the most part, yes. I will tell you that in smaller newspapers, where it is a single owner, yes, that is a big-time thing. Maybe the owner is spending a lot of money to endorse a particular candidate and will order his editorial staff or her editorial staff to endorse a particular candidate, even though maybe they don't want to.
Right.
That will happen. And it's no secret that McClatchy, which owns the Charlotte Observer, is hardcore into Democratic politics. No secret at all. And so I went through the editorial board, which combines the editorial boards from the Raleigh News and Observer and the Charlotte Observer, because they're the same paper. They basically cover this. They have this one office with two bureaus now, because no one's reading either paper. And when I worked there in the 90s, there were 300 people in the newsroom, and I'm not just the newsroom. 300 people, that's in photos, photo editors and copy editors, 320 people in the newsroom. Now, seriously, I'm not joking, there's 27. Mm-hmm. 27. But so there's 8 people that make up the editorial board and opinion board for the Charlotte/Raleigh News and Observer. And want to take a guess at how many Republicans there are? I went through and looked up all their voting records, right? Some of them don't have voting records, but I know some of them personally, so I didn't need their voting records, right? But all of them that you could find their voting records, because it's all public, it's all out there. I could look up Coach Matt Doherty's, you know, voting record and everything else. It doesn't say who you vote for, but it tells you who you're registered for. But here's the part that the people at the Charlotte Observer did not take into account, Coach. So when they get there and they're put on the editorial board, they're basically made to sign on as unaffiliated, as an independent.
Yeah.
They're told.
Yeah.
So you can see someone changed their affiliation in 2018, which happens to be the same year they were hired at the Charlotte Observer.
That's right.
Right? So you go through, but what you can do is you can go through and see, okay, I can't see if you're Republican or Democrat because you're an independent. Oh, but is it purely by coincidence that over the last 15 years you've only voted in Democratic primaries and not Republicans? Not once?
Yeah.
So, I mean, with Barry Saunders or Paige Mastin. Only Democratic primaries. Sarah Piquino, only Democratic primaries. Robin Tomlin, only Democratic primaries. Kevin Sayers, the famous cartoonist, who's won a Pulitzer Prize, who changed his affiliation. Only Democratic primaries. Like, starting to see a pattern here?
A little bit of a trend.
Yeah. So that's where, when people say the media is left, and then the media tries to deny it, all you got to do is look at their voting records.
Why is the media left?
I that's a great question, and I get that a lot. And I will tell you the answer to that when we come back, because I will tell you what other media members have told me when I've argued about it, but I will tell you my theory, and I believe it's an accurate one as well. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winterble, taking you up till 6 o'clock tonight when Charlotte 6 with Mark Garrison gets underway. And by the way, Mark Garrison will be joining us in about an hour and 30 minutes or so to talk about and preview Charlotte at 6. Also in studio is Coach Matt Doherty. And so, Coach, just before we went to the break, you asked me, why is the media left? And there's no denying. And the very first time it hit me was in 1992. The very first time I realized, I was at the Charlotte Observer. I was essentially a rookie. I'd just only been there for, I've been there for 10 months. And they did a vote, an internal vote among the newsroom. Who are you voting for? Clinton? No, I'm sorry. It wasn't even there. It was Al Gore. It was Clinton versus Al Gore, 1996. Who are you voting for, Clinton or Al Gore? And it came back 92% Bill Clinton. Now, full disclosure, not Al Gore. It was Dole, Bob Dole. Thank you. I don't know why I said Al Gore. It was Bob Dole. And so, full disclosure, I wasn't into politics. I just went on whether or not I liked someone, and I didn't like Bob Dole, and I wound up voting for Clinton. But the fact that it was 92%, that was the first time I was like, oh, wow, that seems exceedingly high out of some 300 people that it's 90%. And then I go to Clemson a couple years later, and I remember thinking, wow, everyone here is so left, because you see the same people every day and you're talking to them, because that was right when the Gore-Bush thing started happening with the Supreme Court. And I went, oh, my goodness, everyone is left. All the sports media is left. And there were 15 daily reporters there, Coach, and I've been an independent my entire life. As I've always said, I have voted for 4 Democrat presidents and I have voted for 4 Republican presidents. And
so why is the media left?
I believe it to be this. One very good friend of mine who's a reporter with ESPN once said to me, well, it's because the media is educated. I had another reporter.
Excuse me.
I had another reporter, a very, very close friend of mine, who's a hard Democrat.
Well, said, Bob Knight used to say, I'm going to interrupt. Most of us learn to read and write by the time we're in the fourth grade and then move on to bigger and better things. Go ahead.
The other reporter that said to me in Clemson said to me, and he's very hard left and very close friend of mine, said, well, it's because reporters by nature are challenge authority. And that's what Democrats and liberals do. They constantly challenge authority. Unless, of course, you're communist. But my theory is this, and I truly believe this. There's a gene within reporters. Because most reporters consider themselves artists, especially the writers, the artistic. They could, you know, I'm writing prose and I'm putting together a story and crafting this, especially magazine articles and or newspapers. If you think about artists,
right,
painters, musicians, actors,
right,
and writers, they're all Democrat.
But why?
And I think that's just
my question.
That
why?
Creative gene or something like that, it's part of being in the creative process that makes them that way. And so I truly believe that there's something in the creative gene. Those who generally are creative in terms of creative artistically generally are Democrat. Almost, I mean, look at Hollywood. Look at the music industry. I mean, I mean, you know, you there are the unicorns out there that are Republicans in the movie industry or the television industry or the music industry, but by and large, they're all Democrat. And the same thing with reporters. I would dare say, including sports media, just media in general, I would say that probably, if I had to guess, 85% of all media, and I truly mean that, 85% of all media is probably Democrat.
Yeah. Well, I just want to, like to me, it's the why. I want to know why. Like, you know, I just Googled that. Why is the media left? And I came up with the liberal media. It's no myth. And this is an article dating back to 2004.
Oh, wow.
Business Week Online.
And it's not a myth. I mean, the only people who argue are the people in the media. And, you know, I always used to say, well, that's like the only people who ever thought the ACC was good in football were people that went to the ACC. Like, none of the rest of the country ever thought, you know, you'd have your Clemson.
Did you just say the ACC is not good in football?
Shocker, I know. Shocker.
Sad, but true.
But, I just, the only people who argue this point are people in the media, and they're all registered Democrats. And they're arguing that they're not liberal. And I'm like, well, no, of course you're going to be tainted and biased in things. And, for instance, yesterday, WRAL, which I know you know that station up in Raleigh, they were talking about the Mark Robinson situation, and they said he was making homophobic statements. Well, that's an opinion from a reporter, because I can guarantee you there are a lot of people in North Carolina who don't think that what he said was homophobic. And because you don't agree with what he said, you're now labeling him as homophobic.
That's the secret sauce. That's their method. That's the, you know, if they don't agree with you, they label you, you know, like they try to do to the Republicans as a racist, and that backs people up. Then people aren't going to be as outspoken. That's their modus operandi.
Well, and that's the thing. And so I truly believe it's what, you know, just like you would say, well, maybe most bankers tend to lean conservative. Most that are in the field of arts tend to leave, and people who are reporters tend to view themselves as overly important artists. And there is no more sensitive bunch on the planet than reporters. When Donald Trump started using the term fake news, oh my gosh. I mean, you can do a lot of things, but don't come after the media. And the fact that
Pelosi just went after the media.
That's exactly
what's going to be the push. That's my point, is what's going to be one of my points. What's going to be the pushback on Pelosi's comment? Because if that was Trump, he'd get crushed right away. Mm-hmm. And now finally, after Biden's been in office since January, but the election in October, finally, he's getting some pushback in the media, finally, just a little bit, but you know, if you flip it and Trump was in office doing the same exact things that Biden was doing, he'd get crushed.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. A little Violent Femmes playing. How about that, TJ? See, I know that stuff now. That's from my college days. Telephone number 704-570-1110, sitting alongside Coach Matt Doherty, taking you up until 6 o'clock tonight. Real quick, Coach, let's go to the phones real quick. Yeah. We got Ryan. What's going on, Ryan? Thanks for calling.
Hey, no problem. So you were just talking about how you felt like artistic people have a gene in them that tends to make them maybe lean left. Does that mean it's God-given?
Well, I mean, I think anything that you are born with, some people become extremely conservative. Is that God-given? Some people want to become doctors or bankers or, you know, go to the far right, go to the far left, whatever. I think a lot of that, you know, whatever inside of you internally, I think generally, yeah, I think that would be. I mean, I know it goes versus the nature versus nurture type thing. I understand there's that argument. But at the same point, I tend to believe, yeah, I mean, if you come out with creative juices and you're going to be a great painter like Picasso, well, I promise you, Picasso wasn't, you know, voting for any Republicans.
I just find that a really big stretch, man, to think that God determines your political affiliation.
Well, does he help you guide you towards your job if you're a skilled painter or a skilled surgeon?
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Really? So God-given ability, so there's no such thing as called God-given ability when it comes to being an athlete?
I think that, well, you ask the coach if God-given ability is enough.
Coach, God-given ability, it's not enough, but you've got something to work with. I could never be an NBA player, no matter how hard I worked.
Yeah. I just think that, is there groupthink? Yes, there's groupthink. You know, and if you are surrounded in an environment, whether it's an artist or a reporter, there's groupthink. And you're not forced, but it's hard to fight that, right? And you generally think along the same lines. But, you know, in terms of born that way, you know, I think we are born certain ways. This is a very... you know, a topic that, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if I'm qualified to talk about, but you think that, okay, someone's born with certain makeup and somebody's born with another. My daughter is very artistic, but she's conservative Christian. So, you know, I think there's always exceptions mm-hmm. and I think you can't, you know, use a broad brush to paint.
Well, no, I agree. Well, you know, but when I would say, like I said, I truly believe that probably 85% of all media vote or vote left. I mean, that's just what they do. And again, you know, people who decide to go to journalism school when they're 18 years old, and if you looked at the journalism students at the University of North Carolina, you're not going to find many conservative Republicans in the journalism school at the University of North Carolina or at the University of Georgia or at Syracuse University, University of Missouri, or Northwestern, which are the big journalism schools. You're just not. And these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids.
I guess, you know, to me, again, the question is why? Like, why is it rooted in journalism? Why is it rooted in academia? I mean, mm-hmm. all these universities are so left. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for, like, my daughter, conservative Christian, going to the University of North Carolina. It was very difficult. And you get... you know, if you write a paper that is conservative, you will probably get a bad grade versus going along with the professor and left-leaning. You know, I mean, I know that's a very general remark, but I'm not the first person to say that and see that and feel that. And there's a sense of bullying in universities that you will think left, you will think liberal, you would think socialistic, and that's scary to me.
I'm curious because you know you're seeing things with your daughter, and you know, and I'm sure you've spoken to many parents who have kids about the same age with you know in college. I don't remember ever that being an issue when I was in school, but granted, that was 1,000 years ago. Do you ever remember that being an issue?
Listen, politics, like, I only knew Ronald Reagan was the president because he got shot in 1981 and it held up our championship game by about an hour.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. That's all that I knew about politics.
Same. Yeah, and so I
knew we could drink beer at 18.
Yeah, I didn't realize that I didn't feel like I was being force-fed to think one particular way or another. I never felt that.
No. So where does this come from and why?
And it's gotten so much worse. It's
undeniable. Awful. And well, a lot of funding, these universities take a lot of funds from China, from other countries. They're funded. So like anything else, if I'm funding your campaign, I expect you to vote my way, right? I mean, it's not like, oh, yeah, Brett, here, I'm going to give you $100K, $1 million, and you could do with what you want, even if you want to do something that would hurt my business. So, you know, China was funding some Ivy League institutions, Northwestern, in different ways, shapes, or forms. Well, they're going to influence the curriculum. they're going to influence the conversations in the classroom. And I just don't, I don't like it.
When we come back, we're going to get into some of the media and how they're starting to actually turn on Biden. There's been several articles written this week on how the media, for lack of a better term, is no longer protecting Biden as much as they were previously. You know, when it came to his mix-ups where he just couldn't remember what he was saying or anything like that. And now they've actually started to, for lack of a better term, turn on him a little bit. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that. I am Brett Jensen, sitting in for Brett Winterbull. He's Coach Matt Doherty. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Mr. Winterbull today. He will be back tomorrow to take you through the rest of the week. Coach Matt Doherty is with me today as well. Came in a day early because he's going to be out of town tomorrow, so hope you guys are enjoying that. Telephone number 704-570-1110. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Brett_Jensen for all the latest breaking news. So I generally do a pretty good job at getting some of that news out there. So make sure you guys follow me on Twitter for that. Okay, so just before we went to the break, Coach brought this thing up about talking about how the media is finally starting to turn a little bit. They're not vicious. They're not going after Joe Biden with all these fangs, even though, you know, you never saw him during the campaign because he was literally in a bunker holed up and was not, and he was actually literally not allowed to do more than 7-minute interviews or speaking engagements longer than 7 minutes because his mind would start to wander or he couldn't focus that long. And so that's why he's only answering a couple of questions a week as he's walking to and from the helicopter or whatever he's doing as he's walking by the media, where Trump would sit there and hold court for 20 minutes and answer as many questions 4 or 5 times a week. Biden's answering 2 questions twice a week. So that's on average right now. There's actually someone keeping track of the averages, and it's pretty amazing. But there's an article that says, big article in Politico that says, the president's decline is alarming. Biden is trapped in a coronavirus malaise, by the way, great word. And then there's talking about how the Democrats are getting increasingly nervous about the fate of the Biden presidency and whether or not they're going to be able to hold on, you know, to at the midterms in a year from now, if they're going to be able to hold on to all this stuff, and how fewer and fewer people are having confidence in Biden, as we just saw that the inflation has gone up to 5.4%, the highest rate of inflation in 13 years. Also how the supply chain is now a disaster. Like it is critical mass right now with no one in pretty much any walk of life. Bars can't get their alcohol served.
I like the priorities you put. Hey, you put that first.
That's right.
So much more important.
That's right.
That's so much more important than the chips that need to go into the cars in Detroit.
Well, yeah, those things are, by the way, and those are usually made. There was a big thing on 60 Minutes. Those are generally made in the Far East, out in the like Taiwan and area. And those, they thought those would be good to go by January. They just came out not long ago and said, oh, no, there's no end in sight. Like, we're talking at least another year. And I think it was I saw Subaru is out of cars. I think it was Subaru. They're just out of cars.
Ford can't put cars on the lot. They don't have enough.
Right.
I mean, this has been an issue for a long time. And, you know, I mean, since Biden has taken over, listen, Biden's been treated with freaking kid gloves. I mean, back in October, Brett Winterbull and I sat here and talked about Biden and his son Hunter and all the crap that Hunter was involved in that the media glossed over and covered up, okay? Mm-hmm. And now they're saying people knew that Biden was just a puppet, yet they voted for him, all right? They voted for him. And, you know, oh, shocking that inflation's up. He shut down the pipeline. Now we got to get a gas from international sources, supply chain issues. People can't get product. I was talking to a client, you know, who needs product from China, and the product's supposed to be here by Christmas. They're not going to get it till February, and the stress that puts on relationships, business relationships, the stress that puts on prices, gas prices in New York, highest like ever. They're over $5, like $5.35.
Really? Wow.
Afghanistan, how he screwed up the withdrawal from Afghanistan and the border issues. Like, the media is starting to turn on him. They should have been turning on him from the beginning and not giving him such a free pass.
Politico is saying through their some of their focus groups and stuff like that that they're finding that, you know, generally they're all getting Biden grades of C- or lower, and somehow it always kept circling back to COVID. Be it the supply chain issue, be it all the mandates, be it everything else that's been going on, and it is a major issue. And, you know, restaurants, they just announced, like, there was a story earlier this week here locally that a lot of the barbecue restaurants have had to trim their menus because they can't get the food.
I deal, again, with restaurant, car dealers, people that import products, people at stores like you just mentioned, fast food, they have to pare down their menu. And now you get customers that come in that expect like you to have, just say, different size cups. Well, I can't give you a small. What do you mean can't give me a small? We don't have cups. Like, so, you know, now you have an 18-year-old kid who is working at a fast food place trying to do a good job, and you have this adult who used to be patient, but now there's an edge on everybody. So all of a sudden, a kid says to him, "Sorry, ma'am, I we don't have any smalls." "Why?" "Well, we don't have any cups." And they're like, "Why don't you have any cups?" I don't know. He can't explain supply chain to somebody in a fast food restaurant. So there's an undertone of tension, mental anguish throughout our country right now that I've never seen before. Now, granted, I've never been 59 before. I've never had two kids in their 20s. My views are different than they were when I was in my 20s. But there's an undertone of just concern, helplessness, that is very concerning to me, because there's so much uncertainty. People don't know what the immediate future brings. Like, you used to be able to plan a year out. Can't plan a year out. Can't plan 6 months out. Can't plan 3 months out. How do you staff your business? You don't know if product's going to be coming in. People jump from one job to the other. People aren't showing up at work because they're getting checks from Joe Biden to stay at home. And that causes some of the inflation.
My brother, who runs one of the largest car dealerships up in Philadelphia, said he literally has no new cars on the lot, and they have already sold 23 cars. So once they get, they're going straight to the people. So these people have bought the car, and they're just waiting on their car to show up. So 100%. It's a big deal.
I ordered a bike like 2 years ago. I forgot about it. I got a call today that the bike might be in August of 22. Do I still want it, or do I want another one that's more expensive? That I'm like, what? What?
He's Coach Matt Doherty. I'm Brett Jensen, sitting in for Brett Winterble. Got a lot more to get into in the final hour, including Mark Garrison to give us a preview of Charlotte at 6. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winterble today. He'll be back tomorrow. Coach Matt Doherty is in studio with us after about a two-week hiatus due to a lot of moving parts and him out of town and Winterble out of town. But Brett will be back tomorrow, so looking forward to that. Coming up at about 45 minutes or so from now, Mark Garrison will be joining us to give us a nice preview of Charlotte at 6. So I want to talk about this and just give you guys an update of what's been going on. So some of the news locally here today was that Myers Park High School will have a new principal going forward. Mark Bosco, quote-unquote, resigned, using air quotes there. And he will no longer be the principal at Myers Park High School following a lot of bad allegations against him and his leadership and trying to prevent sexual assaults and trying to or lack lack of helping victims, as they claim that he did not help protect them. And even when they made complaints to him, it was just sort of brushed aside. And CMS said, you know, it's time, that they believe it's time and he believes it's time for some new blood there at Myers Park High School. So after 8 years of being principal at Myers Park, he will now join the front office, the main office at CMS. I have not seen, and I've been looking, and I still haven't seen what his job will be. But regardless of what his job is, he will maintain and retain his $149,400 a year salary.
It sounds, you know, when you're saying that, reminds me of Brad Stevens. He's a coach of the Celtics. They reassigned him to be the president of basketball operations. I'm sure it's the same salary. Maybe not. But, yeah, sometimes the change is necessary, and it is. Sometimes it is political. It's not that somebody's not doing a great job, but if the forces beneath you, whether it be the employees, any constituents, fans, feel like it needs to be a change, sometimes you have to appease them, and that's inmates kind of running the asylum a little bit. But you know, sometimes you have to make decisions that are political.
So Bosco was suspended as the principal at Myers Park High School back in August after school officials received a lot of backlash for how they've handled the claims of sexual assaults there. At one point, you even had the chairperson of the CMS school board, Elise Dashew, write a post on Facebook saying that these young girls were not raped. And then an hour later took down the Facebook post. And I've tried to ask her about that particular Facebook post many times. And each time she has refused to answer, and literally at one point after the school board meeting ran out a side door, like hurried out the side door. As you see these like in old TV movies or, you know, movies of, as reporters are yelling, hey, you know, whatever, which 99 times out of 100 never happens in real life when you have all these reporters yelling questions all at once. It just doesn't happen. But as she's running away, and scurrying away, I'm yelling down the corridor, Elise, why did you delete the Facebook post? And I'm yelling it, and just she just scurries on down the hall.
Oh yeah,
and I after that happened, I just started laughing. I was like, oh my gosh, I just became a cliche.
Yeah,
it just became a cliche of yelling down a hallway trying to get someone's attention, and everyone's looking at me going, what is he doing? So yeah, but so all that being said. You know, CMS said they conducted an investigation and they found that he didn't do anything wrong on his part of failing to respond to sexual misconduct. And that and so they said, look, we don't think that he did anything wrong. He handled everything appropriately. But we also think it's time for him to be put into another position. And but to your point earlier, and I want you to expand on this again, during the first hour, you said, well, if he didn't do anything wrong, then why the move?
Right. You know, you want people to do the right thing and stand up for what's right. That's ideal in my world. But the people cave. And everyone, when there's pressure, look to protect their own domain. Whether it be someone above the principal, to the side of the principal, and feel like this is in everyone's best interest because it could cost me my job. It could cost, you know. So for everyone's best interest, we need you to resign. We'll keep you at the same salary. You have a different job, blah, blah, blah. I like to stand up for what's right. And, but, you know, I talk about core values a lot. Respect, trust, commitment, positivity are mine, RTCP. And the T part here, the trust was broken in him leading that school. Whether it was right or wrong, it was broken. So it might be better for him to step aside. And since he may not have done anything wrong, maybe he does deserve the salary that he gets to do the right thing by him. So it's I jokingly say it's it's tricky. It's just very tricky because there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of opinions. And in the day of social media, if they yell it loud enough, often enough, that's the narrative, and you can't defend it.
Let's go to the phones real quick. Troy, thanks for calling, Troy.
Hey, I just had a question. I love you guys, first of all. Do you think there's any chance that the change in his position could be construed as some kind of guilt and open him or CMS up to civil lawsuit by the parents of the girls?
Appreciate the phone call. Well, I can tell you, one, there is currently in litigation one girl suing CMS. One of the lawsuits was settled out of court. CMS paid the girl, who's been very vocal about it, $50,000. And so it makes you say, well, if CMS didn't do anything wrong or if nothing wrong occurred, then why is CMS paying $50,000? One case is currently in litigation, and it's a civil suit. And it would not surprise me. And this was happening while he was actually principal. And even though he's not principal there anymore, there is not going to be, you know, any time frame. Maybe, I don't know if there's a 7-year window that you have or whatever, but there could be more lawsuits coming if they chose to do so, either class action or individually, because I believe Nick Oxner from Channel 3 WBTV has spoken to, I believe, to 6 different girls that have made these accusations about Myers Park High School and specifically Bosco not helping them alleviate the sexual assaults or making them feel safe and helping them progress in their complaints towards law enforcement. So that's still on the table, because like I said, one's actually still pending. All right, with that being said, all right, Boomer, now look, Coach and I have to be somewhere immediately after this show at 6 o'clock. So how are the roads looking out there?
We'll get them out of there for you, man. Come on, we'll get them moved.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winterbull. Taking you up till 6 o'clock tonight. Coming up in about 30 minutes or so, a little bit less than that, Mark Garrison will be joining us to give us a preview of Charlotte at 6. In studio with me is Coach Matt Doherty. And let's put some of your basketball prowess to good use, as well as a lot of the things that we know what's going on with our society. The Brooklyn Nets came out and said Kyrie Irving will not play until he's actually vaccinated. The state of New York says that you can't be in a building unless you're vaccinated. This California basically has the exact same thing going on. So, and Kyrie Irving is dead set against it. And so there was thoughts that he would play only on away games,
mm-hmm.
and places that he was allowed to play, like in Charlotte. He would be allowed to play here,
mm-hmm.
As long as he's been tested. But the New Jersey Nets came out and said he will no longer play until he meets vaccine requirements and is basically going to start getting fined for being, quote, suspended. And then that coincides the exact same day that Texas Governor Greg Abbott said, in the state of Texas, in your company, you are no longer allowed to give vaccine mandates mm-hmm. to your employees. So you've got opposite ends of the mm-hmm. spectrum here. When you hear that, though, first of all, I want to get your thoughts about the NBA situation as an athlete, as a coach, and as now a private citizen.
Yeah, well, I just think personal opinion, to me, we need to educate ourselves and decide what's best for us as human beings, whether you want to get the flu vaccine or not, the COVID vaccine. There are differing opinions, and I've been on both ends of the spectrum inside my own family. It's been a very troubling process, one that was very difficult for my daughter and I to discuss because we were at opposite ends of the spectrum. Where can you find good information? That's going back to the left controlling the narrative in the newspapers. We want just good, honest, the truth. Like, I want the truth, you know, and it's hard to find the truth so that you can make good decisions. I think it is everyone's right to get the vaccination or not. And if they don't want to get the vaccination, can you mandate it as an employer saying you've got to have this vaccine or you can't, come to work. I don't understand that part of it because you can have. I'm finally vaccinated. Okay, I struggled with getting the second shot because I felt like Biden kind of deceived us, saying that the shot was FDA approved when it wasn't at the time truly FDA approved. It was still under the EUA, emergency use authorization. So I have smart friends on both sides that, give you counter arguments. So finally I took it, and we can't come to work here if we don't have it. I do some work for ESPN. I had to get the proof that I've been vaccinated. Otherwise I couldn't do games for ESPN. The thing that I don't understand is the people that are vaccinated, why do they worry about the unvaccinated? Because if you're vaccinated, then you have a better chance of maybe not getting it from, say, the person who's unvaccinated. And you can still get it. And if you are vaccinated, as I just said, you can still get it and you can still give it. So really, to me, it's a personal choice. The biggest benefit, I think, to getting vaccinated is you don't jam up the hospitals as much. That's the biggest benefit. Other than that, I think it should be your choice. Your body, your choice, much like the abortion topic. And you and I have talked about that several months ago. Your body, your choice. Well, it's not really your body when there's a fetus in there, all right? That's you plus one. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic. But with this is truly your body. And if you don't want to get the vaccination for whatever reason, you shouldn't have to.
The Brooklyn Nets came out and said, look, Kyrie loves to play basketball and he wants to be out there. He wants to be participating with his teammates. But again, this is a choice that Kyrie had, and he was well aware of that. And Kyrie has made his own choice. And so, again, it's a touchy situation where, the Nets have said this. And I would think because this is a – I would think because he plays for an organization, the NBA basically oversees everything, that – and it's not an NBA mandate. This is now becoming a Brooklyn Nets mandate that he, if he wanted to, I think would have a pretty good case because the overriding governing body is the NBA, and the NBA does not have a mandatory vaccine policy in place. It's the NBA that controls the Brooklyn Nets. And so that's what's interesting. But then, like I said, literally yesterday, Texas Governor Greg Abbott came out and said, we are not going to have mandate vaccinations or vaccination mandates in the state of Texas. Those are now illegal to do. And it's extremely interesting because and to your point, and I deal with this with the media all the time on all these press conferences. Just had a press conference the other day with the head of infectious disease for Novant. And, he generally speaks to us every 2 weeks. And then you have Gibby here in Mecklenburg County, the health secretary here in Mecklenburg County, health director, Gibby Harris, constantly with the media. And, they were upset that there wasn't a vaccine mandate in Mecklenburg County. But, at the point, what we are told is that if you have, the new real-time data is coming out. If you have Moderna, you are somewhere around 97% pretty much protected from ever getting COVID-19. There's a 3% chance that you can get it. And if you do get it, the odds of you passing it to someone who is vaccinated is extremely remote, very remote. So we're getting the real-time data. This all came from Stanford not long ago. I want to say Pfizer was 88%. Because the funny thing is, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, everyone wanted Pfizer because they thought it was more effective. But it turns out in real-time data, people with Moderna are catching it 10% less than people that have gotten Pfizer. There was no data on the Johnson & Johnson. So I do find this extremely interesting. I think the doctor for the head of epidemiologist for Novant, all of Novant, and there are many, many hospitals, said, I think he used the term somewhere around 400% more likely to catch COVID if you're unvaccinated. But to your point there, Coach, what he said was, if you do catch it, you're not coming to the hospital. You're not going to the hospital. And he said, I think he said the other day, 99% of everyone in the hospital on ventilators right now are people who have not been vaccinated.
Yeah.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winnable. He will be returning tomorrow to take you through the rest of the week. And coming up in about 13 minutes from now, Mark Garrison will join us to preview Charlotte at 6, which comes on, oddly enough, at 6 o'clock. Coach Matt Doherty's in with me today, and someone that we both know and having worked with and here at WBT is Pat McCrory, former governor of North Carolina, former mayor of Charlotte, and running for Senate on the Republican side. And he seems to have he does have an exceedingly substantial lead in the polls on the Republican side. And they put out an email today, Coach, that said that he's raised $1 million in each of the two quarters that he's announced that he's running for, since he's announced that he's running for Senate. And I find it interesting that on his side, he's going to have to spend very little money to get the Republican nomination. He's so far, like dozens and dozens of points ahead in the polls, unless something catastrophic happens between now and April. But on the Democrat side, you've got Jeff Jackson, the state senator who lives here in Mecklenburg County, who I've interviewed and who's been on this station, going against Sherry Beasley, the former North Carolina Supreme Court justice, who many thought she might be the front runner. And they've both raised a lot of money, about the same amount as Pat McCrory, you know, a couple million dollars. And I see Jeff Jackson out there, out and about on social media and emails and all over the place, just like we get a lot of things from Pat McCrory and Ted Budd. But Sherry Beasley, you would not even know she's running other than once every quarter putting out how much money she's had to raise and having to reveal how much money she's raised. Outside of that, you don't even know she exists, Coach. And that's what's going to make for an interesting thing come April, when you've got two Democrats who are going to have to spend, if they really want this, really, really spend a lot of money, unless maybe they've made a pact that says, you know, we're not going to spend any money. Neither one of us are going to spend money. And we're just going to see who the North Carolina voters want. And we're going to be nice to each other and then save it all for Pat McCrory, because Pat McCrory is going to have a ton of cash. I just find that very interesting in the world of politics right now.
Or maybe Sherry's decided to retire and pocket that money to build a nest egg. I'm just, right. Just a thought. Just a Long Island thought. Yeah, listen, politics, I definitely don't see people saying, oh, let's just play nice and let the voters decide. You know, they're gonna work it. If they want it, they got to work it, and they got to fight. And it gets ugly. It's an ugly business. It's worse than recruiting at the high level of college basketball, where people tell lies and shame you, and you know, there's, you know, I just looked at Pat McCrory's website, and it talks about Ted Budd lying to the public about his role in business, and that is the hunt. That is why good people, most good people, I shouldn't say that. I got to be careful how I phrase this. That's why a lot of good people don't want to run for public office. And I've talked to friends of mine in this community who have had successful careers and could be great public servants, but they don't want to do it because they don't want people to do a deep dive and go back to a fraternity party in college in the early 80s and have a picture of somebody who was drinking too much and saying, would you vote for this guy?
Right.
What? Like, really? Like, and so a lot of good people, like, I always felt Colin Powell would be a great presidential candidate. And he's a Democrat. But he's a guy I could get behind and vote for. It's a shame that it comes down to that. So are you willing to take those bullets in that position? Because you know you will have to.
Well, and that, I think you hit the nail on the proverbial head right there. I mean, you know, especially with Colin Powell, there was a lot of people that really wanted him to run. And, you know, and that's, that goes to the root of it all. I mean, another one, to be perfectly honest with you, Condoleezza Rice was another one that I was a big fan of back in the day during the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Huge fan of hers, extremely smart.
Yep.
And also, I mean, obviously she's exceedingly smart. She's went to Stanford and now is a professor at Stanford, but she's also a golfer. And that made me like her. Like, she loves the game of golf.
Oh, that's going to make her a better politician? Isn't she a member at Augusta?
She is.
Yeah.
She is.
Yeah, well, we got to be, I mean, yeah, I get it. She has the whole package.
She does. Absolutely, yeah. She does. And so, but I just found it interesting that, you know, with Pat McCrory and Jeff Jackson, constant emails, constant social media, constant this, constant that, and Sherry Beasley, who many thought immediately was the front runner and who's raised a ton and ton of money, she's just MIA, nowhere to be found. And I just find that perplexing and a little odd. And so I don't know. I just find that, just like I said, I just thought it was just some good food for thought out there, just something to think about, because,
well,
supposedly the front runner and raised a ton of money and can't find her.
Well, the only issue I have against with Sherry, she went to Duke.
There you go.
Well, she has a degree from Duke.
There you go. Yeah, has a degree from Duke. All right. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Brett Jensen sitting in for Brett Winterbull. Coach Matt Doherty's in studio with us.
Interchangeable Bretts.
That's right. But just like I like to say, I'm the, not the original gangster, not the OG, I'm the OB, the original Brett. At least here, anyways.
Hey, you and I are doing some kind of fancy ring-dang-do on the internet tomorrow night. Shouldn't we be promoting it?
That internet thing?
That internet thing, yeah. What are we doing?
The internet, yeah, tomorrow night at 7:30, and you'll be able to watch us live as you and I decide as part of Talktober. Talktober, I think, is what it's called.
Yep.
You and I are going to expand and put out our genius answers to whatever questions the listeners or viewers may have, and expand on particular topics that we have yet to determine.
See, that's the problem about being on camera again. Radio listeners will go, it looks like Mark's been expanding, all right.
So that's tomorrow night at 7:30.
7:30, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've already picked out what cigar I'm going to have. So, yeah. Yeah, you think I'm joking, too.
No, I don't. So 6 o'clock. We'll talk about the Myers Park rape scandal ongoing. I'm sure you've talked about it some today.
Yep.
Principal Mark Bosco at Myers Park reassigned to the main office. This comes after 6 students, former students, reported they were sexually assaulted, and Bosco did nothing, tried to talk them out of it, out of filing a complaint. We'll chat with Nick Oxner from Channel 3, who broke the story. Still a lot of questions to be answered in all of this.
Yeah, I saw him earlier today, and when I was walking in, and you know, and I had, you know, When I saw the email and everything that went out about Bosco that quote-unquote resigned or stepped down, you know, Nick was literally the first person I've thought of, because he's the one who's been on top of this from day one.
Yeah, Bosco's lawyer put out a statement today saying he did nothing wrong. And he'll still make big money working at the main office.
$149,400.
Wow. William Shatner got really emotional today. Did you see any of that video after he got back from space?
I got to be perfectly honest with you. I literally just saw the video for the first time during this past commercial break.
Yeah.
But that's literally the first time I was like, oh, yeah, William Shatner, when Captain Kirk went into space today.
Well, if you were 90 years old and went to space and made it back, I might be pretty emotional, too. I mean, in some of the video, he looked sort of terrified. And he did say that the thrust and the pressure at launch was more than he had anticipated. So,
well, my only thing with that is, look, if you're going to spend millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to send someone to space, do it more than 11 minutes?
Yeah, really. That's a short
ride. I mean,
ride.
Once you're up there, you're up there.
That's like a state fair ride. Really? Speaking of which.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's 6:35 on our success segment. I was up there on Monday for a fair preview. We'll meet some state fair food entrepreneurs, including a woman who is staking her future on her banana pudding.
Now, let's bring Coach in on this. All because, right. You know, he's from Long Island.
Which means he's probably never had banana pudding.
Oh, no, I've been down. Listen, there's a reason I've went to school in Chapel Hill and then decided to move back here.
And it was the banana pudding.
Was top of the list.
But I'm curious, like, if you ever were to have that, or if you decided, or your wife decided, you know, at a family gathering like you just had up in New York, if you made banana pudding, do they serve that up there in Long Island or in New York in general?
No, no. The best banana pudding I have had is my Aunt Marie. This is my wife's aunt in Lincolnton.
Ooh.
Okay, Aunt Marie can make some Nana pudding, as
that's
they
it.
Say it, right?
That's it.
And then our friend Connie in Mooresville. Top two, and I probably shouldn't say one versus two, a tie for first.
Yeah.
So I can continue to get, you know, the banana pudding. But yeah, I love banana pudding. Oh my gosh. And it's healthy because it's a fruit, right?
That's right. It's got bananas in it. And vanilla wafers. So, yeah, it's got to be
right.
Good for you.
That's exactly right.
Oh, and later in the hour, we'll visit the best French fry stand at the fair. And I'm telling you, those will set you free.
Were they, like, garnished with something? Like,
well, they can be if you want them to be. You can have them plain because they cut them fresh in front of you and drop them in the fryer. And they've got a seasoning salt and a little spritz of malt they can put on there, or you can have them plain. I like them plain. They're that good. But
the seasoning salt was all that I would ask. That's all I would want is the seasoning salt.
Yeah. Are you a fry guy, Coach?
The fries?
Yeah.
The best fries? Fries. You're talking fries?
We're talking
practice?
Yeah.
I gotta go with Chick-fil-A, the waffle fries.
They are good, yeah.
Because
those
the surface area, all right, you want me to get into the dynamic?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's more surface area in a waffle fry to capture the ketchup.
Well, that's a good point.
And it can get in the nooks and crannies.
It gets in the nooks and crannies.
Yeah, I think I heard TJ disagreeing.
Wait a second. I'm talking here,
oh, I'm
Mark.
Sorry.
But the other thing is, like, I'll order the number one to go. Sometimes I throw in a chocolate shake.
And
by the time I get home, the fries are done. Like, I can eat those fries without ketchup. That's how good they are.
They really are.
Well, I will say this. For the very first, I had a Chick-fil-A boxed lunch the other day at an event. And first time I'd ever seen Chick-fil-A potato chips.
What?
And they're not only are they Chick-fil-A potato chips, they're Chick-fil-A potato chips in the exact same shape as the fries.
They're waffle potato chips.
They have waffle chips?
Yes. I had them for the first time last week. Yeah, actually, in the potato chip bag, just like a Lay's potato chips, and they're waffle chips.
I bet they were good.
We got to do a deep dive here. Are they like the fries, and then they kind of just cool them? And
no, they're actual potato chips, and they're thin like a Lay's potato chip, or they're about as thick as a Pringles potato chip, a little bit thicker than a regular potato chip.
They got
chip.
Holes in them.
It's part of their catering plan. I think that's the.
All I know is there was part of a box lunch I got.
I got a friend at Chick-fil-A in Mooresville who hadn't given me the heads up.
Yeah, I was going to say, hook us up with some of those.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
Mark, looking forward to it, my man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Coach, thanks. It's been a pleasure having time with you again, my man. It's a great, great time to do radio with you again. And Brett Winterbull will be back tomorrow. I am Brett Jensen, and you're listening to News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT.